This meeting is being recorded.
Okay, hello everyone. Hope you're all doing well. We do have at least 4 committee members here, so we are good to go and get started. Committee member Thomas Lamb is not going to be present today. Everyone else is here though. We will skip over the investment report and come back to it just to go over items 2 and 3 because we do have Attorney Fleming here to discuss one of the items with us. So for the approval of the minutes, our last meeting was on November 10th. I would need somebody to make a motion to approve those minutes.
You know, Leanna, I did not see the minutes.
The minutes, let's see. Taylor, I think you're on it. Can you do me a favor and email them to everyone?
Yes, I'll send it right now.
Okay, we can come back to that then, that item. Let's do the administrative matters while Taylor's sending that to your email. Now, there were a couple things actually that were brought up at the last meeting under new business. One of them had to do with a census, wondering who a contact person was, and also that there was an error of determination date on the statements. And another item that was brought up was kind of had to do with the plan document, which would possibly potentially need to be changed because it had to do with paraprofessionals who say then become teachers and continue working for the city of New Haven, but are no longer in the paraprofessional plan. Technically, they're not able to withdraw that. They're no longer employed by the city. And it wanted to be brought up to question, you know, because someone who becomes a teacher, you know, they're interested in being able to withdraw from the para pension plan. So I do have attorney Pamela Fleming here. I believe she's on. And she was just going to touch on our plan document of, you know, how it is now and if it would be able to be changed. However, I think we have to then talk about this because I think this actually, if there were to be any changes, it would actually be something that would be dealt with the Board of Ed, if I'm correct. Is Jessica, is that what
you're saying? Okay. Yeah, because they're the plan administrators, or they're the ones that put all the language together in the first plan document in like 1996, maybe. So they are the plan administrators. They are the only ones that can approve the changes that, you know, we can make or they want to have made.
Okay. Attorney Fleming, are you on the call? Oh, you're on mute, I think.
Oh, I thought can you hear me?
There you go. Yep, we can hear you now. Hi. Thank you for joining us. We had I know you, Mike, and Jess and I had a call back in maybe November, December. So if you could just give a quick synopsis to all the other members of kind of what we discussed about what the plan says now versus, you know, what would need to be done in order to make that change and if it's easy or so on and so forth.
Sure. And just so that I'm clear, because I understand you have a couple of different plans, but we're talking about the money purchase pension plan right now. Is that correct? Okay. Yes. Because I did look at our files and you also have this 401a plan. So the money purchase pension plan is a defined benefit plan. So the ability to take, well, first off, the right now as the plan is drafted, there are no in-service distributions permitted. And if somebody transfers, but they're still within the city of New Haven, but they're still employed by the city of New Haven, they are still considered in service. So the distributions that they are permitted to take under law are restricted. And because this is a money purchase pension plan, that's a defined benefit plan. So the permissible in-service withdrawals are fewer than if it were a 401a plan. So you could amend the plan to allow for in-service, but there is this one exception. You can allow in-service distributions when a participant reaches age 59 and a half. And that's pretty much the only thing that would be allowed for a defined benefit plan. Hardship distributions and loans are not permitted from a defined benefit plan. Having said that, there is also a possibility, but you'd have to talk to whoever is maintaining another plan. There's, instead of allowing a participant to take a distribution, if they switch jobs, sometimes companies allow plan-to-plan transfers. It's a lot easier when it's from one 401k plan to another 401k plan, because if you are transferring something from a defined benefit plan, one of the requirements is that the distribution options of that defined benefit plan have to be maintained in the plan that's accepting the transfer. And because this, your plan has what's referred to as a qualified joint and survivor annuity, that would have to be carried over into the new plan. So I don't think it's all that common to have plan-to-plan transfers from a defined benefit plan to another plan.
Attorney Fleming, Derek, did you have a question or something to add?
Yes, I did, because you know, not to contradict what Attorney Fleming's saying, but I'm pretty certain this is a defined contribution plan, not a defined benefit plan. And I think a lot of what's happening is the paras are going to work in the for the Board of Ed as teachers, which I don't, they have 403B plans individually.
They have a state of Connecticut teachers pension is automatic. The 403B is optional, but not all of them have it.
Gotcha. So Attorney Fleming, if in fact what I suspect is correct, this being a defined contribution plan, could the paras that become teachers roll their portion of this money into a 403B should they want to? They want to open up a 403B as a teacher, roll the proceeds from this fund to that fund, because I know for sure this is not a defined benefit plan. Defined benefit plan is SERP, PNF, where there's a benefit at retirement at a certain age, you're guaranteed a certain benefit. Where this is just, hey, there's 2% of your pay going in, both from the employee and from the board, and whatever it does in growth. That's just a like an individual account balance. It happens to be pooled because it's a money purchase plan, but it's not a defined benefit.
So for purposes of ERISA, money purchase plan is generally sort of a hybrid plan, and it's treated as a defined benefit plan. But let's just put that aside for now and answer your specific question. If this actually were a defined contribution plan, then yes, the rules would be, well, it would not necessarily be different. Well, the permitted in-service distributions would be different, and you would not be able to do a rollover unless you were eligible for an in-service distribution. But the plan-to-plan transfer rules would essentially be the same, except there is more room to eliminate the qualified joint survivor annuities.
I mean, there are no annuities, referenced in this plan either. So that's why I think the language has to be very clear on what this plan is.
So, okay, yeah, what plan? So I have the plan. It's New Haven Board of Education, Local 3429, Council 4, AFSCME, Paraprofessionals Money Purchase Pension Plan. Is that the one we're talking about?
Correct. Yes. But, you know, money purchase plans it's an antiquated term. We don't use money purchase plan terminology anymore in our world. So in essence, this is a pooled account of all employees, all members, into a one pooled account, but there's a record keeper that accounts for individual balances every year. So there's an accounting done every year, and it gives the each para a statement that shows what their representative balance is. So and upon separation from service and or retirement, they're allowed to take their portion out and roll it over to either an IRA or to a checking account and pay taxes on it. So it's very much more similar to a you know, in private sector 401k than it is a defined benefit. There is no annuity contract associated with it, nor is there a defined benefit at retirement. So I think money purchase pension plan, the language of that name or that title is definitely antiquated and not really very accurate.
It was written in 1996 that way. It hasn't been changed.
Right.
I think their biggest, Hyclus, if this is correct, I think their biggest concern was for allowing members to withdraw from this plan if they then become a teacher. Whereas, you know, now it's set up, if they become a teacher and are a teacher, you know, for another 15 years, they cannot touch the money in the, you know, para plan until they retire as a teacher as well.
Right, that's correct. And the other issue with that was that I did read one of the language that says it's between, it's just for members of 3429. So I figured if somebody left the local 3429 and go to another local, then that money would go with them wherever they go because they're no longer a member of this union. So if you're a member of the teachers union, you get the benefits of the teachers union and not the benefits of the local 3429. So that's part of the issue with that.
I think this goes back into what Derek was saying, though, as far as, you know, the rules and regulations regarding a defined benefit versus a defined contribution plan. I was always under the impression that this was more of a defined contribution plan than a defined benefit plan myself. Just for the fact that if someone left, they withdraw the money. Or unless enroll it over to another type of plan. So,
but Jess, has anyone ever done that? If they become a teacher, they haven't been allowed.
They can't.
No, they have not been allowed to.
The reason they can't is because the employer is still City of New Haven Board of Education. Yeah. So that's the problem. There's no change of employer.
Correct.
It's a different role. So that's historically. So I think that's the real crux of the argument here is like, okay, the Board of Ed is still the employer, whether you're a para or a teacher, but the role or the design of the, you know, the title of the labor is different, right? So that was where this whole thing came up is like, hey, can there be an amendment in the plan that says, hey, if you change roles, you're no longer part of the para union, you're now part of the teachers union. Can we call that a qualifying event where that can change over to the 403B or what have you?
Exactly. Thank you for that, Derek. Exactly.
No problem.
Now, if this was something to be allowed, though, this would have to go back between the Board of Ed bargaining with PAIR, right? So that, I believe...
Yeah, to renegotiate the agreement, they want to change it.
So there are two aspects, I think, to this that has to be done. The first one is the Board of Education would have to approve the plan document change. And then the plan document change would have to match whatever is in the actual union contract related to this. So it would have to be done almost at the same time to really be an effective change.
Okay, so the plan document change would come through us, working with us, and then it would have to be approved by the Board of Ed and then also agreed upon in their when the contract negotiations happen.
Yeah, I would assume as far as the labor negotiations piece, honestly, I don't know the paraprofessional union contract like I do all the other ones, but I don't know if the union contract just references this plan document, which in that case, then whatever we change is what's in effect, or if there's actual language in the union contract about this defined contribution.
Okay. Attorney Fleming, would it be an easy process to get to make that change to the plan document?
What change? What would you specifically?
I mean, is that even possible to make the change to allow them to still be employed by the city of New Haven, but what if they leave, you know, as a pair and become a teacher, can they withdraw, or is it not even able to happen, just has to stay as it is?
There's still, regardless of whether we call this a DB plan or a DC plan, there are still restrictions on when an employee can take in-service distributions. And the fact that they're moving jobs does not change the fact that they're still an employee. So okay. We'd have to, you know, make an amendment within those constraints.
But you're talking, Attorney Fleming, you're talking about within the plan document itself, right?
Yes, we'd have to amend the plan document. Yes. I wouldn't have anything to do with the union agreement.
Right, and I think that's the whole thing. If we were able to amend the document, and I think within all the regulations related to, like you said, whether it's a DB or DC, they would have to, you know, being able to roll it over from this plan into whatever other plan that another job offers, you know, within the city, because we have different unions that have different contribution type of plans. So.
Well, and if you can do it as a transfer, a plan to plan transfer, there's a lot more flexibility.
Right. And that's kind of what I was thinking, is more or less of like, from this plan to another one of the 401 or other type of plans that we offer based on the bargaining unit that you're in.
Okay.
Yeah, so it would be a 403B or a 457. I mean, that's really all the only thing the teachers have.
Right.
But I think I was trying to think of which ones. I knew 457 was the 403B, but even if a para moved from, from the para union to an 884 job where we offer the 457s, we still have to make sure that we have that flexibility to move it over to a 457 type plan, not just right. If you're moving from a para to a teacher, because they can get right. Other jobs. So.
Right.
Okay.
So I think Highcliffe, that's kind of, we kind of have the gist of what we were trying to do, right? Is really just if a para moves over, mm-hmm. they really have the option of transferring it over to another plan type based on where they're moving to, right? Okay. So I think that's really the next charge that we have to do here, is looking at the plan document and seeing if we can insert that type of language, and then working with Tom Lamb, who is the current COO, and who would be then the plan administrator, and seeing, you know, if the Board of Education has any objections to that.
Right, I agree with that, because... you know, for our contract, it just mentioned that the board will contribute that 2%. We contribute 2% and the board will contribute 2%. There's nothing in the contract language that, you know, anything broader than that. It's just the contribution that the city and the board and the members will make. So I think everything can be done within this document that we have.
Okay, I'll definitely, Highcliffe, I'll definitely check with Tom Lamb on that. I'll go with you on that. I agree the easiest way we can do it, if anything other than the contributions not referenced in the union agreement, then I think it's really the plan document itself. But I will certainly double check with Tom Lamb and the Board of Ed HR on that, so we can move smoothly with this.
Good, thank you.
Okay, thank you. And thank you, Attorney Fleming, for also
having me. One more thing before she leaves, because I had another concern. I don't know if that was not in the minutes, but the other concern we had were the fees. The fees, according to the plan document, was supposed to be paid by the Board of Education, but it's been taken out of our benefits.
The fees for what?
The administrative fees.
I don't think that was that was from the minute. So I'm just.
Now, I mentioned it last meeting. That was one of my concerns. Maybe I should put it that way. One of the concerns I raised last meeting was that the fees, according to the defined plan plan document, was that the board would pay all fees. And now we're being charged the fees.
What fees are you referring to? The Board of Ed pays, like, are you talking about the lawyer fees?
Whatever fees, I don't know what it is, but we're being charged the fees.
So I think, Leanna, what Heikos is speaking of, so I think in the plan document, it says that all fees, I don't know if it says I didn't look at the language. If it's administrative fees, I'm not really sure what it says. But it says fees are already paid by the board. I think currently the board is paying like read and reach fees and whatever else, whatever other administrative fees, a census. But the investment related expenses are coming out of the plan itself. So if we need to start billing the Board of Ed for the investment management fees, I think that's what Heikos is speaking of.
Okay, yeah, because I was going to say, I think the other fees go to the Board of Ed.
So I don't know, like, if in the plan, if it's specific on language about what fees. Is it administrative fees? Is it all fees? Is it investment-related expenses? So I think that's what we need to figure out.
Yeah, it said all fees when I saw it, when I read on there. The old document I just got this new updated one this week, but there was the one I had was saying all fees. But let me double-check. Page 53. I think it's page 53. We could look through it together and see, because that was a lot of money we were losing out of our small benefits. Yeah, the board shall pay all expenses of administrating the plan, including legal, accounting, and investment advisory fees. That's what it says here, page 53. Second to last paragraph.
Recording in progress.
There we go.
They all expected it.
Oh, it says it right there, clearly investment advisor, please.
Yeah.
Trying to see what it says up there. Okay. Yeah, because I think I know. Currently now the legal one was sent to the Board of Ed. Derek, that might then have to be changed. Okay. I don't know how to go about this change or what to do. I don't know how this was originally set up years ago.
So I think what we need, Leanna, is just a list of the investment fees that were charged to the plan itself. Where do those fees show up, Heikos? Is it on the statements?
On our statements, yeah, each individual statement.
I can get, you know, since being at Raymond James, I could get an accounting for all of the fees that were charged. and get that in a spreadsheet and sent over.
Yeah, Derek, can you send that over to me and Leanna and Jessica? And
absolutely,
we'll take a look at that. And I'll have to talk to the Board of Education Business Office and Tom Lamb about that.
That's for a number of years, though, Derek. Will you be able to pick up from all those years?
Yes.
Okay, great. That's great.
Well, let me take a look, Hycliffe. I mean, let me take a look at everything. I'm honestly, I'm not exactly sure what has been done with this plan in the past. So I'll take a look. But yeah, Derek, as far back as you can go, and then I'll take a look and analyze it and talk to the Board of Ed on this.
Okay. I had to switch to my cell phone. I'm sorry.
Was there any other questions that you had for Attorney Fleming before she leaves? I think that might have been everything.
That was it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes.
Yeah. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For item 3B with a census, Jess, you can help me out if I say anything wrong. I know you were pairs were looking for a contact person through a census, and also the termination date error on the statements. Last we spoke to a census, they had said that they were working on clearing that up. Just did they get back to you if it has been done yet?
They have not. No. Hycliffe, you saw the last email. That's the one that I saw, was from Amy saying she's working on it.
Yes. Okay. I did send her to tell me when it would be worked on and be ready. I haven't heard back from her, so that doesn't look good for her right there.
I don't know. I sent her the file a long time ago, so I'm not sure what the problem is.
So the trouble is that, you know, Jessica, I don't know if Mr. Gormani, if you realize how hard Jessica works, but she is not only is she great at what she does, but we do, you know, every single thing. You know, it's Jessica, Jessica, Jessica. I'm tired of saying Jessica. So can she get some other kind of help so that she can, you know, not be so overworked?
I am very well aware of how hard my team works in finance.
Paper negotiations. That was fantastic.
Yeah. I was going to say that that's a very good transition, Hycliffe, into labor negotiations there for Jessica and the team there. But no, I'm very well aware and tell Jess and Leanne and everyone how much I appreciate all the hard work that they do.
Thanks. And I don't mind doing it. It's just, I think that if we try to have a census or Morgan Stanley start answering the pairs questions as a customer service part, they're going to charge us more. And it's fine with me, but it's up to the Board of Ed to work that out and see if they even offer it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've just always been told that they don't talk to anybody. You know, people want a phone number, and I'm like, they don't deal with the employees. They just don't.
And they probably wouldn't at any cost just because of the nature of what they do.
Yeah.
But again, there, you know, I said this, I think, a few meetings ago, or if not last meeting, a census, you know, it's a very, the money purchase plan is an antiquated terminology. So there's not a lot of companies out there that work with them, but I'm aware of at least one or two others. So Hycliffe, if you want to entertain talking to others, I can at least line one or two of them up to present at the next meeting and see if you have a better feeling about someone else's ability to help in this regard. It's more proactive and more responsive, because I mean, I've had my run-ins with them many times over the years. So I get it.
It's definitely an option.
Okay. So if you guys want on the next meeting, I could have at least one, maybe two present. Again, there's not many out there. But I know certainly of one, and I think I know of another as well. So I could reach out and see who can, you know, work in a census's world.
Yeah, if, just to see if they at least offer the customer service part of it. And if they don't, you know, refuse to do anything for 2 months in the summer, which is kind of hard to do. Yeah. Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah, thanks, Derek. The next meeting would probably be around June sometime. So we'll just touch base so that you can let me know if you were able to get, you know, one or two of them lined up for to do like a 10 or 15 minute presentation.
You got it.
Thank you. Okay. Taylor emailed the minutes. Can we go back to that item for approval of the November 10th, 2021 minutes? I will need a committee member to make a motion for those minutes.
Hey, Leanna, I read the minutes while we were doing the call that Taylor sent over. I will make a motion for approval of those minutes.
Thank you, Mike. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. All in favor, just say aye.
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 Hi. Is I think that was Lisa. Are you still on? I believe.
Sorry.
Okay. Perfect. That's fine. All right. And we will. Let's see. I guess before we jump in, is there anything under new business that we're bringing up outside of, you know, what we've already discussed about, you know, two presenters at next meeting and the issue of the fees? Okay, then we can go back to item one. Hey, Derek. Hannah, yep.
I'm sorry. It just dawned on me. Did we give Attorney Fleming, are we having Attorney Fleming look into adding the new language and sending it back to us?
Yeah, I'm going to send her an email at the end of this. Okay. I assume that that is most likely the step, would she would have to add in that language for us, and then, you know, the committee members, all of us would have to review it to either accept or make additional changes.
All right. Just wanted to make sure.
Yeah. Yep. I'll email her at the end of this. Yep.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. So Derek, Wendy, the floor is yours.
Okay, great. Thanks. Who's running the presentation? Is it Taylor?
I have it up. Yep.
Okay, great. So why don't we start with the performance report first? I know, you know, the world is very crazy right now, so want to see what's going on with the fund, and we could show you, you know, the conservative balanced approach of the fund has done a good job. But if you could pull up, so I'm sorry, I had to switch to my phone because my computer is dead, so I haven't really, is it up? I don't know how to
do this. Yeah, the investment overview.
Yeah, all right. I'm not that good with the phone. I've never done it on the phone before, so I apologize.
That's okay.
Hold on.
What do you want to see, Derek?
The performance. So on page, all right. So page two, if you might.
Executive overview.
Yeah. I just want to see where, how the heck do you, so all I have now is just trying to find how to, oh, there we go. Got it. Ooh, I saw it for a minute. There we go. All right. Perfect. So the upper left-hand corner, is this page two?
No, go back to page, I think.
Page go back one?
Yeah, please. There we go. Okay, perfect. So the upper left-hand corner, you can see the bar charts, and you show the board's performance, and you can see for the quarter, so that was through February 28th, the fund was down 4.56. The S&P 500, which is the stock market, was down 8, and the bond market was down 3.25. So we'll talk more about that under, you know, what's going on in the world and with the markets. But what that tells you is that there really was no place to hide. So you have the stocks, which are, you know, the invest, quote unquote, the investments, and then those were down 8, and then you see the Sleepwell, the Bloomberg, the bond index was down 3. So typically what happens when markets correct is there's usually a rush to fixed income. The safety assets are bonds. But because of what else is going on with the Federal Reserve, with rates going up, bonds are down too. And we'll talk more about that in a minute. So if I can just put that on a side note. But what I wanted to highlight is if you look all the way to the right, so since March of the last 2 years, the fund is up 9.66 per year. So even though we're still in a bit of a sell-off in the market, we're a little bit of a bumpy road, which is very natural, by the way. You know, obviously, the reason which the market is selling off, some of it is not natural, obviously. But, you know, corrections in the stock market and the bond market are very normal and at times create opportunities. But big picture, you look longer term, the fund's still up 9.66% per year compounded annually, which equates to about $1.2 million the fund is up just over the last 2 years. So, yes, it's down a little bit, but we think all things considered, the fund is still held up quite well. If you could go now to page three, Leanna. Okay. And so this just shows graphically on the right and the left, you know, you can see that, you know, half the fund is still conservative in fixed income. You know, that's our sleep well portion. So it's still very conservatively invested. We have 13% in cash, you know, 48% in fixed income and only 37% roughly in stocks. So even though the fund is very conservative, we still lost a little bit of money. But if this fund were invested more aggressively, obviously the pain would be felt quite a bit more. The right-hand chart just shows a line graph of the growth of the assets. So the blue line is, you know, the principal, the amount that's put in, and the green line is the amount of growth. So you can see, obviously, there's still substantial growth above and beyond what was put into the fund. So that's the name of the game. That's what we're trying to do here. Great in the markets. We still have some good growth built in. Leanna, if you could go to page seven of the presentation. So this just shows obviously what's on the forefront of everybody's mind is how is the fund allocated to the world and how much, you know, Russia or Ukrainian exposure is there? You know, this report just shows graphically where the funds are invested. And you can see 78% of them are right here in the United States. So the vast majority of the fund is invested in the United States. You know, you add another roughly 1% for Canada. For the most part, the majority of the fund is invested in the United States. We need to diversify a bit. You know, obviously, when we invest and create investment advice, we do diversify by country and region just because there are various reasons for where growth can occur. But this doesn't really specify Russia, but if you look in, you know, the blue is Asia. So broadly represented in Asia of, you know, just under 2%, which is about 147,000. So that's not just, you know, they lump Russia into Asia. It's that dark blue color. So I would argue that there's really not a lot of exposure at all to Russia. And there's no direct exposure to Russia or Ukraine. So that's what I wanted to highlight that. And if you could go to page 10, Leanna. So this just shows on a risk reward. This is one of the things we look at graphically to look at risk and reward when we look at portfolios. And your portfolio is a star in the middle, the yellow star. And if you look over to the right, you can see the annualized return that I spoke of earlier of 9.66% annualized return. And if you look at what we look at annualized risk, it says 6.3. That is extremely, extremely low. So what that means is the portfolio is, by the nature of the conservative investing that this board has put in place, the risk characteristics of this fund are very, very low. And to put it in perspective, if you look down on the bottom, you see the Bank of America Global Government Bond Index. That has a risk characteristic, a risk scale of 7.24. That is, you know, those are bonds. So bonds are typically very, very safe. And you look at the return for that same level of risk is negative 4.4. So your fund is up 9.66 for the annualized rate of return with a very, very low standard deviation or annualized risk of 6.3%. So that is a very good statistic, and we think that has helped the portfolio over time. That was page, 10?
Yeah.
If we go to page 18, please. Now, this just shows over time, again, it's a more granular depiction of that chart we looked at earlier. The reason why I wanted to show you that is this actually goes month by month, and it shows the level of return and with flows. And if you look all the way to the right, the cumulative return, that $1.2 million, is about 20%. So this fund is up 20% over the last 2 years cumulatively, which we're very proud of, even though it's only invested 37% in stocks. So to achieve a 20% return cumulatively over 2 years with just, 37% of the fund invested in stocks, that's very, very, very good. And we feel very good about that. And I think you should too. There's only one more chart I want to highlight on here. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I don't. That's the last of this report. Does anybody have any questions about this report before I talk about the markets and kind of what we think moving forward? Okay, if not, if you want to just pull up the market report. So this was through last Thursday, our most recent report. And as you can see in the top right, pretty much every asset class is negative. And there's the three main reasons that the markets are so tumultuous are obviously everybody knows Russia and Ukraine. And what's going on over there is a tragedy. Because of that political uncertainty, the market is really been very, very volatile. It's sold off quite a bit. That has created a lot of volatility in the market. But even before, Russia invaded Ukraine in February, we had the Fed talking about raising rates and managing inflation. So we have two big things going on in the economy that are also, on the forefront of the market's thoughts that also started. So this volatility started before Ukraine and Russia, and it was because of the Federal Reserve talking about raising rates. I mean, initially they were talking about 6 rate hikes just this year, which to kind of stave off inflation. So as the Fed raises rates, just to remind everybody, when rates go up, bond values go down. So as rates go up, bond values go down. So that's why you can see the bonds in the portfolio were down as well, just because the rates have gone up quite a bit. And they've gone up quite a bit, and they've gone up very quickly. So that's another reason that we are, pretty well protected because of our cash position and our ultra short-term bond position. So, this fund has a very, very good insulation to those types of movements. So again, not much to be overly concerned with at this point. So with that said, I don't want to kill you with information. But I could talk a little bit about some more specifics if you'd like. I mean, some of the things we look at is our, value. So if you could go to the next page, Leanna, please. I don't know if it's the next page. No, not this page. One more page. Right here. So this just talked about valuation. So one of the things we look at when you look at stocks, when stocks sell off, they've now become more affordable or better values. So one of the things we like to think about is, okay, we have a bunch of cash, or we call it dry powder in our industry. Stocks are very favorably valued at this point. Do we think that they're not going to be volatile for the rest of the year? No, I do not. I believe they're still going to be volatile. We think there's still going to be, big sell-offs. Today the market's down quite a bit. Yesterday the market was up quite a bit. So that's just inherent volatility. But the good news is it is repricing stocks to a more normalized, historic rate of valuation. You can see the bottom right-hand slide shows, an average 5-year price-to-earnings multiple in the S&P, and we're right there. So we're back down to average PE multiples. So that's a very good thing. If you could go to the next page. So this just shows the top left chart. So we look at stocks from a few different ways. We look at, multiples and valuations from the individual stocks, but there's also something called technical valuations. And you can see that top left chart, what we anticipate, you see the market run up and you see the market come down, and there's certain trading ranges that are inherently put in place. What we think might happen is, we've busted through that 4,400 level. So we're up and above the what was the resistance level. If we can close and stay above 4,400 on the S&P, we think we're probably going to trade sideways to flat for a bit, just to kind of consolidate and let the market settle. But ultimately, we have a feeling that the markets are still going to be up 8 or 9% without dividends before the year end. So what's going on needs to work itself out. The Fed came out yesterday with some good language. The market liked what the Fed had to say. So consequently, stocks reacted accordingly. I only have, I think, one more slide I want to show you. If you could go, I'm not sure if it's the next page or a couple pages down. Not this one. Oh, actually, this is the one. If you could go back one. I'm sorry, Jeff. Lena. So this just talks about the yield curve. So what we look at is yield curve. So if you think of a yield curve, it typically looks, you know, an upward arc typically, where short end of the curve is low and the long end of the curve is higher. So it's a curve up. But what's happening lately is that the short end, where what the Fed controls, is getting pushed up. The long end is actually reacting pretty timidly, and the middle of the range is coming down. So you're looking at yield curve flattening. And the reason why I'm talking about this is one of the things we look at is if there is yield curve inversion. It's happened a few times in recent history. Typically, that's a leading indicator to market sell-off in the future. So we keep an eye on the yield curve and what it does, because that does, you know, give us a warning in advance saying, hey, things are getting a little bit more choppy. We should probably take a little bit more of a conservative stance. So we are keeping an eye on things. I know, Heiquist, you called me and were concerned about, obviously, how the portfolio is doing. But I think overall, the conservative nature of the fund has definitely helped. And you can certainly, you know, reaffirm to your members that the fund is doing well. It's holding up, even though, you know, the world is having a lot of troubles. And we do anticipate the year ending strong. So we have no real concerns with the way this fund is allocated. There's no imminent need to do anything different from our perspective. But certainly, if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Any questions?
Sorry, I don't have any questions at this time. Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome. Any other questions from any other members? If not, we're done.
Troy's up here. Troy, do you have any questions? No.
I don't have any questions.
Okay, great. Well, you know how to reach me if you do. So,
thanks, Wendy.
No problem. My homework is, I'll follow your lead as for scheduling the meeting, but just let me know and I can get a couple of administrators in to look at this.
Okay. Yeah, I was, just so we could touch on that, the next meeting would most likely be in June before, I would assume before the school year ends would probably be best. So I think you guys are, is it the 21st, the 20th, something like that? I think you guys are finished this year. So I was thinking maybe that first, like the week, like around June 8th or so, 8th or 9th.
Okay.
So that it's not like the last week of school or after school ends. I don't know what, if others were okay. I know it's far in advance, but that's kind of my idea right now is around June 8th.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. That works
for me. Me too. Okay. All right. So I think that wraps up everything that we need to discuss. Tentatively around June 8th will be the next meeting, and Derek will let me know if he has one or two presenters for that, as far as the bookkeeping goes. So if a committee member would like to make a motion to adjourn, we can end this meeting and everyone can have a good rest of their day.
So moved.
Perfect. I will second.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Have a great rest of your day.
Take care, Jessica.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye, Cliff. Take care.
Bye, guys. Bye.